welcome to the Reborn Podcast. I'm really excited about today's guest. We have Mike Glover on the Reborn Podcast today, and he is a great friend of mine and somebody who I have looked up to for several years. I believe I met him about 3 years ago, and my pistol that I carry, actually, that you guys see, I get a lot of questions about this pistol. It is a Glock, and it's an Agency Arms, and I actually got it from Mike Glover, which is pretty cool. He was doing a charity auction, and it was like the person who bid the most money for whatever charity got the gun. And at the time, I didn't even really know how to work a pistol, but I was like, that's a really cool gun, and it was for a good cause. And I was like, sure, I'll take it. So I ended up having the highest bid, and the money went to, I believe it was for Maison Fortunate Orphanage, the orphanage out in Hinge, Haiti, that I have supported for many, many years. A little bit about Mike Glover. So he is the founder and the CEO of Fieldcraft Survival. I have purchased a handful of, like family readiness bags and items that I think is so crucial, especially for me, because I'm home by myself a lot with three boys. It doesn't even matter if, you know, if you're with your family all the time or if you're a single human being. Having a plan and knowing what to do if there is some sort of catastrophe, where are you going to go and how are you going to operate if there, heaven forbid, if there was an emergency and you had to get out of town or you had to get out of your house or, you know, so I have had, some of his go bags, the little pouches. It's not actually like a full go bag, but it's like these little medical pouches. It has everything inside of it, from a tourniquet, a fire starter. It has like a compass, all of the, like the main essentials. But he has gone on to create, he now has full go bags. He has stuff that can go on the back seat of your car, that it makes it, it's like a grab and go. So it can actually be like a backpack as well. But not only that, and what's really remarkable about Mike is this community that he has built with Fieldcraft Survival of bringing people together. And it's like a tribe effect. And the first time that I met him was out in Arizona. I flew out there to surprise a friend, and he happened to be putting on a pistol course at the same time. So I was out at the pistol course, and that was the first time ever that I was working with a pistol. I was actually moving and shooting for the very first time. And it was, I could say now that that was probably the foundations of, even though at the time I was really, really intimidated, but the short amount of time that I was at his course, my confidence just grew. Like I probably looked like a fool doing it because I didn't know what I was doing, but I had really great instructors there, helping me be more comfortable with a firearm. And I walked away being like, wow, like I can do this. And, that was probably 3 years ago. That was the first time that I had ever done anything with firearms. And I definitely had a space in time for a couple years that I didn't train firearms at all. Until this last year, I've really picked it up. And you guys have seen that I've been doing the tactical game. So Mike Glover is a former Army special operator who runs an amazing company called Fieldcraft Survival. Fieldcraft Survival makes premium outdoor gear and apparel, as well as online training courses, which is super, super huge. It's online, but it's also in person. Mike has so much knowledge and just like the mental fortitude of a person. And I cannot wait to talk to him and to learn a little bit about like the businesses that he's doing and growing Fieldcraft Survival, but also just really wanting to pick his brain on having like learning how to be physically and mentally ready, and having the proper gear to be physically and mentally ready for whatever life could possibly bring you. And so we're going to bring him on the show. I'm really excited to have him and to catch up. It's going to be a great show. So here we go. All right. I want to welcome to the show the man himself, Mr. Mike Glover. It's so good to see you again and to reconnect. It's been a while. I don't remember. When was the last time that I saw you?
Oh, it's been,
it's been
over a year, maybe 2 years. It's been a while.
Where were we? Were we in Arizona?
Yeah, it was Arizona when you came out and you did part of a gunfighter pistol course. You shot pistol and were running and gunning on the range in a short period of time.
Oh my gosh. I look at those videos. So at that point, and that was when, so I still have your agency arms. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember.
Yeah. How did I get that from you? It was like a charity thing, but how did I get that from you?
Yeah. So we did a charity, and I said, whoever donates the most to a charity of their choice, I'll send this gun to. And you came in and you said, I will donate this amount of money for this specific charity. And I said, done. That's too easy. And so you made the donation and I sent you the pistol. And then you started training with it. And then when you came, you used that pistol to train with.
No, you still had it. I didn't get it shipped to me yet. Remember, because I was like, I didn't even know how to fly with a gun. And I was like, you still had the agency arms. Those of you listening, it's a Glock. It's an agency arms.
Right.
And so, you know, Mike, he like does all these great charitable things too. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to give this gun away. Whoever wants to donate money to your charity of choice, the highest bid or the highest donation wins. And so I was like, well, that's a cool gun. Like, I don't know anything about guns. I don't even know how to shoot a gun, but I think I need that gun. And then it must have been pretty soon after that I ended up flying out there, and it was a super random trip to surprise Mason's wife, Laura. And, dude, that was like my first time ever. And I actually went to I didn't go out there to like actually participate in the course. And I think you guys kind of talked me into it. And oh my gosh, I just remember like, that was so bad. Like that, I can't believe you guys let me do that because it was so freaking embarrassing. But I will say that the very short amount of time that I was out there with Fieldcraft Survival, the people that I met out there, and that was my first experience ever with firearms, and especially even taking like a class. I wasn't even really taking the class. You guys were like, yeah, just go out there, Ashley, you'll be fine. And this is going to be your pistol. And, it was really intimidating, but with the short amount of time that I was there, I walked away with so much more confidence, even though I did learn a little bit, but I didn't really know exactly what I was doing. And I was still really intimidated by firearms, but, you know, I still use that same pistol at the tactical games.
Really? It's a great pistol. I mean, it's a super custom Glock pistol. But even when you train with us, I think I remember a video from that I saw recently where you were walking and shooting. So you had showed up with not a lot of experience, but even in a short period of time, you were moving and shooting and doing it well. So it didn't take you.
Yeah.
It's like everything else. If you pick up things and you're used to a training process and then applying that, which you are, then you can pick it up pretty easy. And you did. And you did really well. And now you're doing the hardest, most difficult challenges with physical and technical tactical skills that you could do. And you're crushing it. So
thanks. Yeah, I love it. I've started training. It's been less than a year since I've really started training and working on my dry firing also. But I love it. And I really think like going out there and, I don't know if that was the first time we actually met in person, but meeting you and your team and just being out there on the range, there was some, even though I wasn't even dressed at all for the occasion, like the whole thing was just, it's funny now and I laugh at it, but, it really, I didn't know it then, but it really kind of like lit something inside of me and, you know, I guess if you will, like started the foundations of just like the curiosity of, you know, what all of this is about and learning how to be responsible with your weapon system and then knowing how to work it well. So can you tell me a little bit about Fieldcraft Survival? Those who are listening who, I feel like everybody knows who you are. But can you explain a little bit about Fieldcraft Survival, when you started it and why you started it? What was the purpose behind that?
Yeah, so I started Fieldcraft in when I was a CIA contractor when I was in Pakistan. And my goal was to start a company that obviously drove purpose and something that I was interested in. And being a tactical instructor, which is commonplace for guys to my background, isn't something I was super interested in, because I was more interested in survival, mindset, even physical fitness over just teaching somebody how to shoot a gun. So I had this idea to do this genre of preparedness called survival. You can coin it as modern survival, which taught people not only, you know, how to shoot guns, how to safely handle firearms, but also the mindset, how to be situationally aware, self-awareness, all these things that people really don't talk about holistically. And so the reason for that is because I come from a culture in special operations where you don't just learn technical skills. You're involved in a community of, at the time, brotherhood of people that live and breathe this world. And so the question for me is, how can, you know, 20 plus operators go and put themselves in the worst case scenario and succeed most of the time? How can they be successful? And I realized in civilian life, because I was transitioning into a civilian, that there's no culture. There's not a lot of good training resources for making somebody holistically prepared. So it was a difficult business plan, because that seems very conceptual, very philosophical, but not very vertical in creating a model for business. So it was a challenge. But the idea with Fieldcraft is to teach civilians or citizens how to be best prepared for the worst case scenario. And so I've been driving off that mission set for 6-7 years now. And Fieldcraft trains all over the United States and everything from tactical, survival, first aid and trauma, mindset, mm-hmm. seminars. And we also have a product line of a whole bunch of preparedness type equipment, everything from holsters to first aid equipment to survival kits, bags, textiles, even clothing, to make people better prepared and to get involved. Mm. To me, it's all about community and bringing people mm-hmm. together, which is selfishly one of the reasons that I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm. I love the, I think I have a couple of your first aid kits. It's the one that has, it's a little, it's like the little one, and it has like the tourniquet inside and a lot of, and what is the name of your podcast that you have?
I have two podcasts, the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast, and my personal podcast is called Mike Force.
Okay. Yeah. I think it was the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast that I listen to all the time. And I think it's so important. I mean, especially because I'm home alone all the time and I have my boys by myself all the time, and knowing what to do in a state of emergency and how to react. And it's one thing if I kind of have an idea of, like, you know, what I'm going to do, but do my boys know the plan and what to do? And I remember after listening to a lot of like your podcasts and everything, you know, about just like the mindset and family readiness and being prepared. You know, I was like, do my boys even know how to put a tourniquet on? Do they even know what a tourniquet is? And I remember, after I purchased, that little, what is the name of that little kit? Do you guys still have that on your website?
Yeah. You probably, is it the camouflage one?
Yeah.
That's the hunter med kit. So that we make that for hunters, but it has all of the stop the bleed and first aid stuff for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important, and something that it's like, it's easy to say, it's never going to happen to me, or like, oh, what are the chances this is never going to happen? But I mean, I really do believe that, like, unless you're prepared or have a plan, you are setting yourself up for failure, and you're setting yourself up for like just a huge catastrophe to happen and for nobody in your family to know what to do. And like, I kind of want to talk about like the family readiness stuff a little bit, because I'm genuinely interested in that. And I think that it'll be really good for our listeners. I've always wanted to put together a go bag, like a bag that is readily available, for my family or for my boys. Do you have like bags already put together? What would you suggest if people are listening to this and like they're wanting to put together like a go bag? Like, are there certain ones? Like, what about like, do you have one for like a natural disaster, like things that you should have? Can you kind of talk about that a little bit? Cause I think it's really interesting. And I kind of have like a go bag ready, but I'm just like, I don't know exactly what to put in that. And do you have one in your car too? Or do you just keep it in your house? Or can we talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah. So we do have go bags. We actually have a bag called the mobility bag that goes back of your vehicle seat that acts as a panel for all your life-saving gear, but it converts rapidly. Go bag. So most people obviously work in and around their vehicles and they have access to it. So if you're in your office, in your workplace, your car is probably in the parking lot. If you're at home, your vehicle is going to be a means of displacing from that bad scenario. You know, bugging out is a thing and so is bugging in. So we talk about mobility as the bugging out and homesteading as the bugging in. So if you're in a circumstance where you need to bug out, you want to have a minimum of first aid and the ability to treat trauma and a minimum of survival contingencies. So our bug out bag is loaded with both first aid and survival. So on the first aid side, you want all the things to stop a bleed. And typically that has to do with catastrophic extremity wounding. Like, hey, I broke my arm in a compound fracture. Hey, I was shot. I was stabbed. And then there's higher levels of care that get closer to the core of your body, which include hypalon seals, chest seals, a whole bunch of advanced level of first aid and trauma that you can get trained with, which we also provide. I recommend one that you have a first aid kit in every bug out bag, no matter what. The second component is survival. And look, the staples of survival typically don't change. Depending on your circumstance, which is where you live, the environmental factors are going to dictate what you need to complement your bag with. So the staples of survival are shelter. Shelter will kill you. Without the lack of shelter, you're likely to be hypothermic or exposed, and hypothermia kills most people in austere environments. You also want the ability to make fire. So we have a fire starter, magnesium rod, ferro rod. Also, the ability to procure and sanitize water. Most often people don't think about water, but if you're in a situation where you're austere or remote or you're bugging out, you need the ability to access water, but also take that water and take it on the go and purify that water as you're going. So those are the primary factors. And then everything else that you include are going to depend on your environmental factors. If you live in the middle of Montana and you have a 50 degree temperature swing between day and night, well, you want to have cold weather gear in your bag. So we actually have a general purpose pouch that's designed to hold and equip all of that stuff in that bag. So we create a go bag that just has the staples so you could augment that bag with whatever you need depending on where you're at.
That's interesting. Whenever I got my little first aid kit from Fieldcraft Survival, I remember I had never seen one of the starter kits that you're talking about. I remember I was getting it. I was like, okay, I need to make sure that I know how to use this. And it's actually pretty easy to use. But, you know, for me and a lot of that stuff, I was like, I don't really know. Like, I had to educate myself what the gear is for and like what I would use it for. And I mean, I really think that it's crucial for families these days to at least have a plan and to, you know, I remember one time you were saying how you should know how far you can get on a tank of gas. So if your car is filled up, like what are your end destinations and how far can you travel to get your family to safety on one tank of gas? And, you know, a lot of this is just like, it doesn't take a whole lot of time to kind of plan and figure these things out. But like, once you have them, you always have them in your back pocket. You know, the plan, you know, the escape routes, you know, what your family's doing. Everybody in your family knows what the deal is. And so I really think that that's highly crucial. Man, have you always had the entrepreneurial mindset? Because I didn't know that you were getting into like the clothing and all the gear. I knew that you had some of the first aid stuff, but that's crazy. That's super awesome. When did you start expanding, and have you always had that entrepreneurial mindset?
Yeah, you know, I grew up with a single mom who started a business inside of our garage where we had a dirt garage and it was like a carport, and she poured concrete and set up one booth for her salon where she would cut one person's hair at a time and make her vertical business and scale and growth. And I saw her challenges that she was faced with and kind of got a grasp for understanding business. Now, obviously I spent a whole career in military and government contracting, but I've always had an entrepreneurial mind. So when I got into business, especially with a broad genre that is preparedness, I realized it's very difficult to scale so many different things at once. And so people used to always tell me, hey man, focus on one thing and be really good at it. That one thing initially was training, because we focused down on training pretty hardcore. 95% of all of our business was physical training in person. Then I scaled that and realized if we took that money and started focusing on product and development, that we could scale another vertical, which is our product line. That, which scales typically larger than training, because training requires people, started to become more lucrative. And by design, both scaled together and started complementing each other. So, you know, right now we're a company, we have 40 plus employees, a pretty significant company for a small business. And we're scaling into big box retail and doing a whole bunch of different stuff. But it's just part of the challenges of growing a business. And I think the military and all the planning processes and contingency-based planning that I've always done my entire military career has really helped me in business more than anything. Obviously, the values like discipline and attention to detail, all of those things help. But the ability to take a concept or idea and implement an execution plan to the military, that's helped me most.
Yeah. What, like starting Fieldcraft, did you have the plan in the beginning to make it as big as it is now? I mean, it hasn't even reached its pinnacle, but I mean, from the time that I've known you for the last 3 years or so, it's grown so much. In fact, I think at the time you were just doing the firearm training, and I think like maybe the first aid and like the family readiness or like the preparedness stuff. I mean, what was that, like 3 years ago or so? But you've grown so fast. Did you have it like kind of like, this is what I'm going to do and ain't nobody going to stop me?
Yeah. I mean, if you're starting a business, you always got to think the 5-10 year goal of what you want in the end. If an end is in your future in business. And I think a lot of people make the mistake of just taking it as it comes. And in business, that without the vision of the long-term plan, you're going to miss a lot of opportunities. So my scale was always to grow it into a large company. Now, I don't like the models of corporation in large scale, because a lot of the soul of the company that's retained in the individual, like if Mike Glover is Fieldcraft, then that's a thing. But I never wanted to be Fieldcraft. I want to be an influencer for my own company, and I want Fieldcraft to stand alone on its own. That's always been the vision. So, depending on what we're doing, I mean, I'll have seminars in here with other guys running the seminars, like Tony Blauer was in here, and guys came up to me after the class, like, hey, do you work here? And I'm like, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I own this company. I'm a military guy. And they're like, oh, that's really cool. Did you serve with Tony? Or were you working with Tony? I was like, yeah, I worked with Tony when I was an active duty guy. They're like, oh, that's real cool, man. Good stuff. And they walk away. I'm like, yes, we're doing
it. Yeah, that's...
I like...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's so awesome. So like with Fieldcraft, where did you get the name Fieldcraft? How did you come up with that name?
So in special operations, my main job and everything I did was based in reconnaissance. And I was a sniper in special operations. I had a sniper team. You know, I was in charge of entire units that did reconnaissance and sniper operations. So in sniper training and in sniper craft, you have something called field craft. Field craft is your ability to operate in austere, remote environments. It's everything from camouflage and concealment to being able to surreptitiously stalk on on your prey. You know, being a good sniper requires that you have an understanding of the land, you understand survival, and you understand how to live off that land. So my whole thing was that field craft and honing your craft was my experience in the military. So field craft for survival is honing the craft of survival and everything that it encompasses. So for me, it was an easy transition, and it stemmed from my experiences in special operations. So it was a no-brainer for me.
Have you seen the TV series called Alone?
I actually tried out for that show. Actually,
oh my gosh!
Yeah, I didn't get picked up because I had another opportunity that I jumped on. But I'm actually good friends with the producer of that show, and I love it. It's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, I think it was season 7 that I watched. It was whenever they were out there for 100 days.
Yeah,
and I was so addicted to watching that because I mean, even watching that show, I felt like I learned so much just about. I mean, it was crazy. It was so crazy the things that you know. And I think a lot of it kind of got into, which was crazy, just the mental fortitude of a human being of being alone. And I kind of want to talk about your mental fortitude. And I love how you have been able to create this community. Do you think that when it comes to doing everything that you've done and like building these communities of groups, how much of that do you think kind of transpired from having the community, like in the military that you had, and just like the mentality of being who you are today?
Yeah, mindset is truly the start point in preparedness. And when I lived in that culture that was in special operations, you build resiliency through hard work, through training, through operations, through war, through all these experiences. And so I understood that in hindsight, right? I didn't understand it when I was in, but looking back on that experience, I go, dude, that is the reason why my mindset is resilient. And so when I stepped into civilian life, I realized there's a lot of people who don't understand what that means. And so I had to create a way to disseminate the understanding of mindset. And the best way to build mindset and resiliency in people is through exposure. Not only exposure to challenges and circumstance, but exposure to other people. Because when people start peering together, and there's a psychology to this called groupthink, when people band together, they become stronger. Their will becomes stronger. And if you see this show Alone, a lot of the people quit and fail, not because they lack the technical capabilities, but because they lack the mental fortitude. Because for the first time, they're alone inside their own head. So how do you become better at that? Well, you need to spend time alone. You need to spend time with other people. You need to spend time exposed to things that you're not comfortable with. And I think the coolest thing about the whole mission that we're doing with Fieldcraft is seeing what happens when you bring people together, the communities that are built, but also how much more resilient that people become because of that, which I think is the best benefit of doing this whole thing that's Fieldcraft.
Mm-hmm. So talking about mindset recently, I'm going to read this quote that you wrote recently on your Instagram. You said, "Your mindset is not just a state of mind, but a literal statement in your mind. Confidence, self-esteem, belief all starts with you right now. Want help? Do this. Walk to the nearest mirror, look at yourself in your iPhone camera, and I want you to say, I am the baddest, most capable person here." Can you kind of unpack that a little bit? Because I think, you can just tell, like, your mindset, you have such a solid mindset. Just everything that you do is just, I think that it's so impeccable. So I kind of want to talk about that a little bit and really kind of unpack that.
Yeah, so, you know, people need to understand that for the most part, we don't know as individuals a lot about our minds. Neuroscience, which is brain science, they do have a lot of understanding. But there's a disconnect between what we understand in science and what we understand as normal human beings in society. So making this connection, bridging this gap is super important. One of the things that I like to talk about is like the diagnostic understanding of how things work. If you don't know how your brain works and you start experiencing symptoms that you don't understand, then the only solution for human beings is to involve emotion and make a lot of assumptions. And, you know, assumptions are one of the worst things that you could do to yourself. And so what I want to do is create an understanding more of the technical and scientific understanding of how the brain works. So when you start feeling something, you don't immediately associate it with an emotion and then get overwhelmed and then start making assumptions and then react poorly. But instead you go, oh, this is more technical. The reason I feel this way is because this part of my brain is acting this way chemically, which is translating to this, and that's going to help me. So when we understand that there's a science behind the curtain, then we could start addressing things more cognitively and more technically versus more emotionally. So the conversation or the narrative that you just spoke upon was an idea that stems from science. You are literally what you think you are because that's how our focus works. And so if you take your cell phone records in 4K. You only have so much bandwidth or data capability in your hard drive in your phone. So if you record everything in 4K, then you're going to overwhelm the storage and then you're not going to be able to record anything else and it shuts down. So your brain is the same way. So if we didn't have a filter to partition the things that we needed to specifically focus on, then we would be overwhelmed. Our hard drive would crash. So if you think about that, when you wake up, you only are attentive to certain things and focus throughout the day. So if you're listening to this podcast, you're listening to it and you're driving your car, you're working out, and you're actually listening to it, but you're focused. So the way that your brain works is you have a voice in your head, this narration. It creates an idea. That idea then goes out into the world and partition focus and starts looking for evidence of that narration in your head. So if you say to yourself, I'm the best that ever lived. But let's say you're religious. Have you ever seen a religious person look for counter arguments to their faith? Never.
No,
because because what it is it's an idea in my head because I believe it. I go out into the world and the opposite is true. They look out and they go, that tragic circumstance, I find the good out of all the bad. And then I make the correlation to my belief. And I say, see, that's a miracle. There was a miracle there in that tragedy. And then that becomes their faith. That becomes their new belief. So we script write in our heads the narration. We go out into the world looking for the evidence. And then that evidence we find, we make it a belief. So if you look at yourself in the mirror and you say, you're a fat piece of crap. What you're going to do is you're going to go out in the world. You're going to look at people's demeanor. You're going to listen to comments. You're going to look at people's eyes looking at you and going, see, I knew it. They thought I was a fat, disgusting, ugly, whatever it is. And that becomes our new belief. So when you look at mindset, it's not just a concept. It's not an idea. It's science. You want to be the very best that you could be. It starts with yourself. Introspect and perception. Look yourself in the mirror, and I don't care if you're not the best. Tell yourself you're the best. Look for the evidence in the world that you are the best, and then make that your core belief. That's how it works.
That's really interesting. I don't know if I've actually realized that I do this, but whenever I've done these really long, just kind of grueling runs, or you know, the 25-hour row that I did. And I was like a couple of months ago, I have those conversations with myself, and it's almost like in the moments that I either want to quit or whenever I start like feeling the suffering, or if I'm just like, you know, like, why am I doing this? Or like, this is like, I hurt, you know, everything hurts. It's almost like you have those two people inside of your mind, and you have to learn to feed the warrior within you. I really do believe that everybody has the ability and the capability of finding that confidence within themselves and basically doing exactly what you said. Like, look at yourself in the mirror and tell yourself that you're a badass motherfucker and put it on repeat. And, you know, I think that we allow our own negative thoughts, just kind of like drown us down and drag us and, diminish our resolve. And, I mean, do you think that that's something that, how long do you think it takes a person if they truly got up and practiced that? How long do you think it would take somebody to just kind of, I don't know, like make a turn in their direction?
Yeah, sometimes, look, building resilience in people is not very difficult because one, because of the luxury of freedoms that we have in this country, we are super comfortable. Even people who are supposed to feel or be uncomfortable are comfortable because they have the essentials in survival, like shelter, like safety and security. So when you take that climate, that environment, and you expose people to their own weakness, immediately they have an opportunity to succeed or fail. Let's say we're talking about working out. So in my stress shoots, when I do a culmination of stress to assess technical weakness with my law enforcement officers that I train, the only thing I'll do is I'll give them 5 minutes of exercise. I'll do a minute of burpees, a minute of air squats, a minute of jumping lunges, a minute of jumping jacks, and a minute of push-ups, all calisthenics, right? They're not even adding weight. They're pushing and pulling their own body weight. When they're doing that, within about 3 minutes, typically about the 3 minute mark, you'll start seeing people hit walls, which is uncomfort. So that discomfort translates itself into different facets, depending on their resilience and their experiences. Also because of their cardiovascular and muscular strength and endurance. So if a person hits the wall at 3 minutes and they have an opportunity to push through or quit, what are they going to do? If they push through and they succeed, they create a new gate that extends. It's basically a callus. They are stacking on a callus that makes them more resilient by the layer every opportunity. And it takes 3 minutes of physical exercise. That's all. Because look, a primal instinct in us physiologically is we don't want to be uncomfortable. Because in a primal sense, if you're running, or if you're carrying a large load or you're suffering, immediately this mechanism in your head is telling you, let's stop this because if we don't, we're going to die. And so when we're in that environment, we understand because it's in front of us, oh, we're not going to die. We're completely safe here. So when I was in Special Operations Selections, I said to myself, I would rather die than quit. Physically kill me before I quit. And then I knew because it was the government or because it's an institution or because it's America, I'm not gonna die. Or the chances are I'm not gonna die. So that was an easy parameter for me to set. And civilians or people in general just need that slight exposure. And when they get past that, that builds a new layer of confidence. It blows people's minds just being exposed to that.
Yeah. That's really interesting. How much do you think the physical fitness like plays a part in all this? Like being physically fit and then the correlation between like your mind being mentally strong, which do you think is more important?
I think physical strength in your body, which is not calculated by based off of how much you bench press or how far you could run, but your physical health and wellness and physical fitness capabilities are correlated to your potential mental capacity and your ability to be more resilient. Now, it's not hand in hand. As you know this, because you're in this industry, some of the weakest mental people that I understand are some of the physically the strongest. Because one of the things that you could do in physical fitness is in your own insecurity, you could build your body strong. Some of the best runners I know are the most attention deficit human beings on the planet because they can't focus when they get on the hamster wheel it allows them to focus, and it's like their medicine. But it doesn't, yeah, it doesn't completely correlate to mental health and wellness. The point in making yourself physically capable is not what you can, what you are building yourself up to be. It's understanding what you can get away with. So in the 5 minutes that I use as an example, where the average person at the 3 minute mark is stressed and hitting a wall where they're contemplating their life decisions based on 3 minutes of exercise, a person who's physically fit isn't even in that space to contemplate anything because they're in the moment. They're breathing, they're concentrating, they're reducing their lactic threshold. They understand the competency they need to stay in. And then when they have to technically operate, they're more capable. So I would say physical fitness allows you to get away with a lot more. When I went to the toughest selections in the world and was at my breaking point, I assume based on my level of preparation, which is extreme, that when I was hitting it, half the class, if not more, had already hit it way before me, because I was prepared to the max. So where I hit it on the last day, there were guys who had quit and were too far gone who were hitting it way before me. It's because I was more physically prepared than them. So I got away with a whole bunch more.
Mm-hmm. How do you increase the mind and like the mental fortitude? How do you think that, I mean, aside from like doing things and staying with it and following through, but how do you, I mean, what are some like exercises that people can do to start increasing their mental fortitude? Would you say that it would be doing something like the minute of burpees, the jumping lunges, the, what else did you say? And then like, how do you get that stronger?
So my second answer in order of priority would be physical fitness. But number one, which is most important, is exposure. And not just exposure, but exposure to trauma. Most people think trauma is a bad thing. Trauma that you've been through, that I've been through, is common to all. It's one experience in life that a lot of people think they're the only one experiencing this trauma. But when they start asking questions, they come to the realization that everybody's in this boat together. But when you understand trauma and its impacts on life, but also its ability to make you more resilient and create a new structure for growth and development, that if you seek the exposure, it's going to offensively make you better. And here's what I mean. I don't mean like put yourself in an abusive relationship, because that would be stupid. What I mean is, if you expose yourself to things that you're not comfortable with, that's trauma. So by benefit for a lot of people who are exposed to trauma in their lives, they always use that experience and go, a life-changing moment for me was that accident, was that physical abuse, was that relationship that went bad. And that becomes the pinnacle of all of their growth moving forward. For people who aren't overly exposed to this, it could be as easy as saying, hey, what is something that I don't like doing? Like, for example, a lot of urbanites, they don't like going outdoors. They don't like camping because they don't want to be uncomfortable. I remember the first time that I actually went outdoors and went camping with people who hadn't been camping, not taking a shower, not having the basic amenities of being able to brush your teeth or wash their face or do their normal routine made them very uncomfortable. But when they got through that experience and they realized how adaptive they actually were, then they became addicted to that experience. It's why people in physical fitness who are runners and they get the runner's high, the CrossFitters who are embedded in community and this workout of the day that they suffer together, that's the basic premise for all this. Down to the single cell organisms that exist on the planet, without physical and mental trauma for us, we are not going to be able to grow, evolve, and become more resilient. So I'm not telling people to do things that are extreme. What I'm saying is do things that you're not comfortable with doing. Go take a class, a workshop, an outdoor experience that you've never taken before. You never took, like the first time I took yoga, I was like, dude, I'm a grown ass 225 pound dude. I'm not taking yoga. And then some guy's like, hey man, I think it will help you because it builds all this physical fitness things, but it's also good for your mind, for your breath, for your becoming centered. And I went, all right, let me give it a try. And I was uncomfortable. Stretching and doing all these movements and all this stuff, breathing and becoming more self-aware, I started looking around and went, wow, there's something deeper here. And it was because I was willing to expose myself to something I wasn't comfortable with. When I walked away from that, I was like, I'm a lifelong yogi. I will do this forever because it builds this resilience. And that's the greatest start point, but also for normal people, the easiest start point.
Wow. Have you always been an outdoor person?
Always. Yeah. I grew up in the outdoors. I as a child, from the ages of as early as I can remember until I was a teenager, until I joined the Army at 17, I probably spent 3 to 4 days, even on school nights, outdoors, fishing, hunting, hiking, something like that. And my dad was just an outdoorsman. And so I grew up in a boat. I grew up on a pier. I grew up in the woods. I grew up in the mountains. So it's something that's always been a part of my life.
So you had said something else on Instagram about you felt like you were a runaway teen before you joined the military. Why did you say that? Is it because you were just always outdoors, or was it because like you didn't like why? What does that mean?
I never conformed and I never liked the psychology of groupthink or peer pressure or even small tribes and small groups. Like I didn't like the little cliques that existed in school. So I was the guy who could float to the black kids and hang out with them and could be cool, right? And then I could float to the rednecks and, you know, the country kids, and I could float. But I was always by myself and like was doing my own thing. And so I always felt like a loner, and I always felt like I never belonged to any one specific group because I was very independent thinking. When I was 16, I actually ran away. I lived on my own for a year before I joined high school. And I was a literal...
Wow.
Yeah, I was a literal runaway teen. And I lived in a motel efficiency. I worked my own job. I did my own thing. No friends, no family, no support. And that has been a place and a challenge for me where people expect Mike Glover to be an extrovert, but I'm not. I'm actually I'm very much an introvert. When the camera goes off, when the podcast recording goes off, I go and hide and I farm my land. I pet my goats. I hike in the mountains. I do my own thing because I am truly like a lone wolf. I don't like being congested and a bad way to say it, but contaminated by a whole bunch of people and things. I like simple. I'm a very simple man who appreciates a very simple life. So I like my small circle. And even those guys don't come over to my house on the weekends because I'm by myself most often doing my own thing. And that's how I like it. And that's why ever since I was a child in school, I always felt like I was a loner and a runaway.
Whenever you got out of the military, creating Fieldcraft Survival, did it provide that sense of, I don't know, like community? I know that you were saying that you're a lone wolf, but did you struggle coming out of the military and having that brotherhood and just like the tribe that you had in the military? Was it a hard transition for you coming out?
Yeah, it was super difficult. Now I went straight from active duty to contracting with the CIA. So I had had a transition that was easier than most. But even when I was deployed during couple month rotations, I had just as much downtime as I had uptime. I'm an operational guy. Like if I'm involved, I'm conscious and I'm focused and I'm doing the mission. So when I check out of that, it's very difficult for me to grasp an understanding of who I am or what I need to be doing. So when I built Fieldcraft, it was selfishly building a community and a purpose around me that allowed me to feel like I was still on the teams. And mm-hmm. and that still exists today. I mean, if I didn't have my team and it was just me, I would be alone in the woods or on a ridgeline in the mountains doing my own thing. So it forced me to come out of my cabin and do this thing that is giving back and purpose driven for me. But it was the most difficult thing that it was the most difficult challenge that I faced, I think, in life.
Mm. What other types of gear do you have besides the, I think I remember talking to you a couple years ago when you were working on the prototypes of what you were talking about earlier in the podcast, where it goes behind the seat.
Yeah.
I think I remember, I mean, that was it a couple years ago? I remember you were like, yeah, it's all right there on the back of the headrest, like on the, that's so cool. I think that's like ingenious. But what other stuff does Fieldcraft have that I don't even know?
Yeah. Our genre is all things preparedness. So it's obviously full mm-hmm. spectrum. I mean, we're doing a little bit of everything. You know, we have a store. I'm in the studio above our store in our retail shop in Heber City, Utah. We have a display that's about 5 foot by 5 foot at every Black Rifle Coffee of all of our gear and all of our swag. And, you know, we'll be in Sportsman's, we'll be in Cabela's, hopefully. So when I made this equipment, I made equipment that is going to help people be better prepared, but also be convenient and something that people will purposely inject into their lives where it's convenient for them. What I realized is if you make things inconvenient, they're not going to access that life-saving gear. Like I have it right here because I was in a meeting talking about stuff. Like, this is our visor panel. And so this goes onto your visor, but it allows you to retain life-saving gear and equipment like tourniquets, like stop the bleed, to get ready access, which is in your arm's reach, you know. But also, you could fire and forget. You could put it up there. You could have a survival and med in your vehicle, but you forget it's there until you need it. And so the ability to interoperate that with like our mobility bag, which is the panel that has the...
Oh, that's it. That's awesome.
Yeah. If I want to rip away the med kit and go treat trauma, I can, or I could take this, it won't take but a second. I could take this and convert this into a backpack and pull it off the back of my seat and then take it to go as a low vis backpack. Then it's more convenient and it's part of recreation as well. So a lot of the things that we want to make it so people are involved in the outdoors, they're living their life, but they're not forgetting about life-saving equipment that's going to help them in a bad circumstance.
Uh-huh. Is the visor thing available on your website yet?
Yeah, it is. It's
the visor medkit?
Yep, the visor, the mobility bag. We have a 20-liter duffel, a 40-liter for loadout. We have a new holster coming out in 60 days, which is magnet retained. A whole bunch of stuff. It's a whole bunch of cool stuff.
When you buy the bags, do they come with all the stuff inside or do you have to buy the stuff?
You can buy separately? It loaded and unloaded. We have both versions for preparedness geeks that have equipment that want to put it in there. Or you can completely kit it out.
That's awesome. I'm definitely going to have to check that out. I'm like all about that stuff. And, you know, my boys, my oldest one now is 14, which is crazy. And then my middle one is 12. And they're always asking me these questions like we were driving across the bridge. We have this long bridge in Virginia Beach. It's like several miles long. It goes all the way across the bay. And they're like, Mom, what happens if our car falls off? Like, what do we do? And I was like, we got to break the window. And, you know, even in my mind, like thinking about that, I'm like, okay, well, yeah. Like what happens? Like what if something happens and our car falls off the bridge? Are the chances of a car falling off a bridge like it's probably never going to happen. But even being able to just answer those questions and being ready and knowing what to do if you're put in that situation and that circumstance. That's really cool. So you have a shop now. I saw that you opened that up. Congratulations on that. That's so awesome.
Yeah, thank you. When we did a shop, we don't want it. For us, it's not like about attracting pass-through traffic and it's not one of our mainstays, but it's a benefit to everything we do because you know, tomorrow I have 50 women in here training with me on concealed carry and firearm safety. In the afternoon, we have a seminar, and all those people funnel through our pro shop to get kitted out, to get swagged out. And so it's an ancillary benefit, but it's something that is becoming bigger. You know, we're opening up Fieldcraft NC in Aberdeen, North Carolina. We'll have another shop. We'll have the ability to do hosted training. I'm opening up another shop in Anthem, Arizona. So we continue to expand, and it's something that we never planned for, but something that's become kind of a benefit of all the training that we do. And so we're going to double down as well.
Are you going to come and open up one in Virginia Beach?
I will. We will. Our goal is to have one Fieldcraft Survival Pro Shop and a training center to bring people together in every state. And if I was going to open it in Virginia, it would be at Virginia Beach.
That's so awesome. So how big is your shop, is your store? Because you have the, like, the retail side of things, and then do you have like a big conference room, or like, do you have, cause, and you're still training. That was the other question that I was going to ask you is, like, if you're still training, like, even like women and firearms and concealed and carry, you're still doing all of that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
How big is that? How big is your place there?
So I have here about 7,000 square foot of seminar space. We have a simulator that does 270 degree immersion of stress scenarios. The pro shop, which is downstairs. We have a conference room and a couple of offices and a podcast studio. But I also have a shipping and receiving facility down the road where we do all of our t-shirts in-house. We have a laser engraver. We ship everything direct to consumer. And then in downtown Heber City, we have a corporate office as well as a learning management studio where we do all the recording for our It's wetheprepared.com, where you can do progressive learning on all things preparedness online and virtually. We're standing that up right now, and the studio for that is down the road. So multiple buildings, just building stuff out and scaling as we go.
How many hours do you think you work a week?
So you just take 7 hours of sleep per day, and then the rest, and then add that up times seven.
I know,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's I absolutely love being an entrepreneur and running business, but man, people, it takes a lot of work. And, you know, some people don't understand like the amount of work, and especially whenever you're your own boss, like it's really hard to turn it off sometimes. And I know you seem like the type of guy that just has like all of these ideas all the time. And you're just wanting to, you know, you have like this idea. And for me too, it's like, the inspiration, like when it comes, it's like, it's almost sometimes just like at the most inconvenient times, and like always having the mindset of growing the business and thinking how to grow the team and evolve. So out of everything that you do, what would you say is your favorite thing that you have created?
I think My favorite thing is bringing people together. I think all of these business plans, like even your business, isn't about fitness. It's not about preparedness. It's nothing about the technical, because the technical is just what it is. If it didn't involve people, building, breeding positivity, growing as individuals, bringing communities together to have positive impacts, being able to take profits and partition, giving back and helping other people, then it would be all for nothing. Like, money doesn't drive me. I don't care about the material world that exists around me. I care more about the relationships and the people that we're affecting on a daily basis. The unfortunate thing is most business models don't take that into consideration. And so they're automated and take the people out of the equation. But small business in practice that's ethical always has a component to bring people together. And I started AmericanContingency.com, where the whole idea is to bring community together. That's up and running right now. We have hundreds of groups across America that are training together in preparedness, that are meeting up every single week, that are talking about how they support each other in their own communities. And to me, that's the most valuable equity that you can own, social equity. Like a lot of people, like if you got 2 million followers and then you put a t-shirt for sale and you sell 10, you don't have any social equity. Social influence without equity in the people is a soulless business. So for me, it's all about people. It's all about positive impacts on people.
Huh. Man, what are you doing next? What's the next thing for Mike?
Oh, man.
What are you working on?
Yeah, there's so much going on. For me, one of my main focuses right now is family preparedness, like you said early in the beginning, and building a more reliant citizen of this country. And without even the political side of it, I have seen what broken governance looks like because I was part of a bureaucratic system that didn't allow us at the tactical level to do our jobs, even if it was the right. So yeah. What I'm seeing more of in policy is this dependency on the system. And we got to cut the umbilical cord because the more liberty that you want and desire means the more that you have to show that you're capable of being reliant, self-reliant on your own 2 feet. So mm-hmm. If you take a government handout, if you depend on the infrastructure and supply chain, if the only water and electricity flowing to your house or to your apartment is set up on a system or a grid, then what happens when that dependency is no longer void or valid? That doesn't have to be a catastrophic zombie apocalypse. It could be a storm, a hurricane, an earthquake, a man-made catastrophe, a virus. It could be a hack. So I want to teach people through learning management systems, which we started called wetheprepared.com, to have people to be able to start understanding what it is to be self-reliant, how to grow your own food, how to get off the grid, how to start renewable energy sources, how to protect yourself and your family, and the list goes on. I think the more focus that we have on developing human beings who are more capable of taking care of themselves, then by benefit, we're going to start taking care of each other, which means the most to me, and getting back to the people thing.
So this is something new that you started. Is this like the subscription where you can like subscribe and become a part of this, like this membership and like this tribe? How can people be a part of that?
So if they go to wetheprepared.com, we're in the early stages of content so they could sign up for classes. But the idea is, you know, like say I have, you know, this med kit gets shipped to my house. Well, if I get this shipped to my house, how the hell do I train it? How the hell do I learn it? So we want to be able to have a virtual experience, but also a reciprocating upload where like I'll show you that I'm capable of applying this to myself. And then an expert will cross you off, send you the certificate, and then you're part of the alumni, right? Like you do academics on online learning, like corporate learning, whatever it is. But that's not the end. The that's just the beginning. But then you have the alumni who comes together and you meet up and you start grouping with like-minded people and you start building communities. And that migrates into AmericanContingency.com. So if you want to become a member, you can go to members.AmericanContingency.com and you could already see right now how many groups are in your area. You could join those groups and then you could buy into a subscription, which is $5 a month. That just pays the admin fees of us keeping and curating all this together. But you can learn about preparedness. You can learn about communications, first aid, the list goes on. But you can also start communicating with like-minded people. So those are the mainstays of my focus, is to scale into making it more available for normal people who are grinding, you know, living their best life.
I love that. So I think I have one final question, I think. What is the legacy that you want to leave behind, Mike?
You know, I've thought about that before, and I think my answer has changed over time. For me, it's legacy for anybody. Like the guys that have been killed in combat, where we represent them in small mementos or reminders, are how we memorialize them and their legacies for years to come. When I tell a story about Ben Bittner, about Rob Miller, about all these guys that I respected who are not here physically, I'm keeping their legacy alive by planting the seed in other people's minds. And I think when I think about my personal legacy, it's not important that people remember who I am, who I was. What's important to me is that I'm leaving some positive impact to shift their mindset to create a more positive life for them. So I don't want to be the empowerment. I want to be empowering them to empower themselves to live their best life and to create their best legacies. And if that's a moment in time where my name in their breath isn't even on the tip of their tongue, that's okay. So that means my purpose is to affect people positively, give them hope for their future, and then that starts to spider web and create this network and this growth of people who believe in themselves again. That's, for me, is a legacy that's worth living now and not thinking about reflecting on and somehow impacting somebody through my name or representing my name. For me, it's about the conscious here and now, and my legacy is impacting people positively so they can live their best life. And I think for me, that's enough.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely doing it. It's just so incredible and remarkable and how fast that you've grown in just a short amount of time. And I remember whenever I first met you, or I was like listening to one of your podcasts, and I think I found you on social media, but you're so passionate about what you do, and you're so passionate about helping others and for people to, you know, you're encouraging and telling everybody just like to wake the hell up, and you're providing those tools for everybody. Are you still doing like the classes and stuff? Can people go to the website, or how can people sign up for any of like the first responding classes or the gun classes?
Yeah. So if they go to FieldGrassSurvival.com, we train in about 4 to 6 states every weekend. I have about 20 subcontracted experts that train all over, from survival, first aid to tactics. And it's rare for me to train outside of Utah, but every once in a while I hit the road. Like, I'll be in Dallas, Texas the week after next at Black Rifle Coffee doing a free survival seminar. I'll be in Austin, Texas that same weekend on the 25th, teaching a pistol course. Tomorrow, I'll be teaching concealed carry and safe gun handling. But, you know, we train all over the place. I encourage people to just go to fieldcraftsurvival.com and see where we're at training. If they can't make the physical training, look, we have plenty of resources on YouTube and on podcast to get started and understand what this big, often scary thing is that's called preparedness. And they could watch a YouTube video, they could listen to a podcast and go, oh, maybe I want to advance this a little bit. So that's probably a good start point for people.
Yeah. It's always really inspiring to listen to you. And you really do. You make me realize, as an individual and being a mother and everything that I'm doing, like, you know, it's so imperative to take the time and to make sure that you're prepared and to know how to work through things. And I love everything that you're about and what you're putting out into the world. And it's super, super positive. And I wish you the best of luck. And I really can't wait till I see you again sometime. So I definitely, if there's ever a course or if I happen to be in the area or whatever, I mean, I'm 100% going to be there without a doubt. So anyways, guess where I'm going right now?
Where are you going?
After this podcast.
Where?
I'm going to go see Lola.
Oh yeah.
Do you have any horses?
I do. So I have 2 horses. One that's being trained because she's a bad horse. A horse that is basically a lawn dart that doesn't, looks like a lawn that just stands around and looks pretty, but doesn't really do anything. I miss Lola, and I'm glad. I love seeing you train with Lola because everything about that, it looks primal. It looks like you're in your element, and it looks like such a positive thing. So I'm glad that you have her.
Yeah. And those of you who are listening to this, so Mike gifted me Lola, and I had her shipped out to Virginia Beach. And it's funny because I remember, you know, I grew up on Rockin' D Ranch in Oklahoma, and I have this memory of being around, you know, I was around horses all the time, riding a bareback. My parents bred and broke quarter horses. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, yes, I want the horse. And Mike was like, she's yours. And, you know, you just wanted her to go to a good home. But it was, you know, like horses. I remember I was telling my mom, I was like, yeah, he's like, he's going to give me Lola. I was like, I'm really excited. And my mom was like, Ashley, horses are not free. And, you know, and just like how much maintenance and time that it really takes, like to have a horse. And, but it's been worth it. And I really do. I really enjoy going out and working with her. And, yeah, it's just pretty cool. It's pretty cool. The horse and the gun. It's a pretty good connection there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all the stuff that I love the most, which are, by the way, the things that we used to gravitate towards naturally. I mean, that's a very primal world, the horse. And I love horses, and I love the fact that you're continue to train with her. And it just makes you a better person when you can work through that threshold. She's got Arabian in her, so she's a little spunky. But
yeah, she is.
But that's part of it, right? That's the challenge in it. I love it.
Uh-huh. Do you have, what else do you have at your house? You have goats too?
I have goats, chickens, a garden. I'm getting more. I'm looking for a farm right now. I want to migrate my small plot to a larger plot, and I just want to grow my own food, my own subsistence, and live that life. I mean, it's weird. I was talking about it this morning with Jason McCarthy, the CEO of GoRuck, and we were talking about just different elements of this whole thing. And it's like, you have to be wealthy and secure in life to be able to live a primal life, like living off grid or owning your own ranch or owning your own farm. When nobody wanted to live that life, now everybody's trying to go back to that primal state that we used to be almost uncomfortable, and people want to get back to that because they see this technological and fast-paced world isn't everything it briefed as going to be, and it's not as sexy and cool as it seems. I'm all about getting through this phase of my life and getting back to the primal phase of my life, which I think will be the transition to the last phase of my life, and just enjoy the rest of my days.
I love that. So are you going to fight? This is final question. Promise final question. Are you going to go try out for a loan again? Do you see yourself doing that?
I wouldn't mind doing it. I think I have the technical capabilities to do that. And I would use it as a training opportunity to maybe educate people on the best practices on being your best. I'd be all about it. The question is, would you do it?
I'd have to go to a lot of Fieldcraft survival training in order to even be selected. Yeah. So, I mean, I have a lot to learn, even like with hunting. And I mean, I love that idea of like just the primal instinct of being able to hunt. And, but I mean, I've gone out on like hunting trips, but I've never actually killed anything. Ooh, so yeah. That would be the first step. Well, maybe, yeah, I really want to.
We should do a challenge with you. Like, we're doing this 72-hour challenge thing, and we thought about bringing the 72-hour challenge is bringing a Ziploc bag only full of whatever you want. So if you want a bag of Cheetos, hey, 72 hours, if that's what you want to live off of. So the challenge is my head survival instructor, Kevin Estelle, is amazing at survival and teaching and mentoring, is bringing in guests and having them go through that experience together, but they help you train, but you only get one bag between the two of you. And so you have to.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you have to share your bag with somebody?
You have to share your bag with the expert. So maybe you could be the first guest during our
72-hour challenge. I would love that. Like, I love that kind of stuff. I would totally be down. I'm down for whatever. So
yeah, I'd selfishly have to be your host. Maybe it'd be me and you for 72 hours, one bag.
We could do it.
We could do it.
All right. Well, I'm going to get out and see Lola. It's really good. Just kind of catching up, and I know I've already said it once, but it's just incredible everything that you've done. So, and you are such a leader in this space, and I just know, like, with the community that I'm in and in Virginia Beach, there's a lot of people who really look up to you and just your guidance and just your overall, like, aura that you put into the world. So everything that you're doing, keep doing it and don't change. And I'm super, super thankful for humans like you and everything that you're doing for everybody. So hopefully I'll see you soon.
I hope so. I feel the same exact way about you. You are like, I feel like you're like the female version of me in many ways, and very kindred in our spirits together. And so I feel like we're doing similar things. And I look to you for your mentorship and your advice that you give so graciously to everybody. And so I feel the same exact way about you, and I'm proud to see your growth and everything you're doing. And I'm humbled to have been on your podcast. Thank you so much.
Aw. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, hopefully I'll see you soon. And have a great day.
You as well.
It's always good catching up with people. It's definitely one of the awesome things that I love about doing podcasts is just connecting with people and people like Mike that I haven't seen him in a couple years, just catching up and seeing how much that he has done with Fieldcraft Survival. And really, I mean, knowing, and you can hear that his heart is in it and his heart is there for the community and wanting to help every single individual become a better citizen and know how to survive on their own, be on their own, and provide them with the tools and the community to better themselves as individuals. And then you can take that on to your family. And I remember whenever I got a couple of his like on the go kits that had, you know, some of the like it had like the tourniquet and stuff. I pulled everything out and I was like, okay, you know, I was like, Trip, I was like, I'm going to show you how to put a tourniquet on. And we went through that. And of course, like the, you know, they think that it's silly. And am I ever going to need a tourniquet? Probably not, but it's at least I know, and I have confidence in my boys that if anything were to happen to themselves, if anything were to happen to me, I even had them close their eyes and do it. And we did it in the dark as well. But knowing and having confidence that you know how to thoroughly work through your gear in case there is an emergency, I think that's really, really important. So getting your family ready and having a plan and, you know, the mental fortitude, exactly what Mike was talking about, the mental fortitude of a person and how you can grow that and make your mentality stronger. And it starts with just telling yourself that, reiterating that to yourself every single day, and going out in life and just crushing it. So I'm really excited. I hope that Mike and I's path cross again soon in person. He's such a remarkable human being. And make sure, if you guys are not following him on Instagram, make sure that you are following him on Instagram. His Instagram is mike.a.glover. That's mike.a.glover on Instagram. And he also has his Fieldcraft Survival podcast, which I listen to all the time. And it really gets my mindset right. And he teaches me a lot of valuable skills, listening to their podcast as well. So really excited to have Mike on, and that is it. So thank you guys so much for joining me on today's Reborn podcast. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. I'm going to get out to the barn and, work with Lola and see how she's doing. And, that is it. And I am out. Make sure that you, tell your friends, subscribe if you are not subscribed to the Reborn podcast, leave us a review. Let me know if there's anything else that you want to hear, topics, and I will catch you guys next time. Bye.